We don't always know why we do what we do, and we can't always predict where it will lead us. So the trick may be to stay open to what comes, knowing that it will likely, most probably, in fact, not be what we're expecting. Welcome to The Third Story. I'm Leo Sidran. Lucy Kalantari was a self-described singer of angsty adult music, hustling her way through bar gigs and wondering why she wasn't more successful. She knew music was a passion early on, but she grew up in a family where becoming a professional musician was just not on anybody's radar. She was raised between the Dominican Republic and New York, and in both places, she felt she had to adjust some part of who she was in order to fit in. She made her way to college at the Conservatory of Music at SUNY Purchase, where she got interested in recording and production, and that was something that was not common for a young woman in the late 1990s when she was there. Then she set out to make her mark as an artist. But it wasn't until the birth of her son, Darius, that she discovered her true calling of making music for kids and families. In fact, it may be fair to say that her love of being a mother, particularly Darius's mother, put her on her professional path. Today, she's a Grammy winner multiple times over, one of the most highly regarded bilingual family music artists with her group Lucy Kalantari and the Jazz Cats, and she's a producer. Recently, she's written songs for the newly rebooted Dora series on Paramount Plus, and she's also an advocate and a mentor, working with a group called We Are Moving the Needle, which strives to correct the balance in an industry where women and non-binary individuals are underrepresented. She's also a mentor for Grammy U and an active member of the Recording Academy. Her most recent album, Creciendo, is her first entirely in Spanish. Cuenta, cuenta, cuenta conmigo, que somos amigos. Cuenta, cuenta, cuenta conmigo, que somos amigos. Meanwhile, her son Darius has turned out to be a naturally gifted musician himself. At only 11 years old, the young cellist is not only a member of Lucy's band, but he's also performed as a soloist around the country. Lucy is someone who doesn't just set intentions in a vague or general way. She tends to find mantras, mottos, and specific language to help guide her process. It's kind of a form of manifestation, I think. For example, she tells me that when she began doing family music, she decided that her first principles would be joy, community, and resilience, and that she would return to those principles to help decide which projects she should do and how she should approach them. We spoke earlier this year about the power of intention, why gardening is her favorite metaphor for living a creative life, staying curious, parenthood, and the Grammys. And I would like to take a brief moment to address the Grammys question right now, because every year there's a week when the Grammy voting submissions begin, and those of us who follow and are followed by a lot of musicians are bombarded with four-year consideration posts, emails, and texts. Inevitably, this reopens the perennial and sensitive conversation around the Grammys, what they represent, and who they really serve. Lucy Kalantari is perhaps a rare example that I know of an artist for whom the Grammys and the Recording Academy have been a very productive and positive force in her life. And she talks about the value of being involved with it in our conversation. Third-story.com is the place to get involved. Visit the archive and check out past episodes, including conversations with other family music artists or artists who have at least dipped their toes into the family stream, like Dan and Claudia Zanes, Michael Hurst, Peter Himmelman, John Medeski, and Falu. And check out the Substack. It's leosidran.substack.com for all the new episodes and other writings, too. And don't forget that we're made in partnership with WBGO Studios. Visit wbgo.org/studios to find out more about all their award-winning content. Here's me and Lucy Kalantari talking it down in Brooklyn earlier this year. Lucy Kalantari. I want to just set up our conversation by saying a couple things. We met at a yoga studio a decade ago or something, or maybe more.
Namaste, man.
Namaste. Yeah, but you didn't stay. You left the neighborhood. You used to live in the neighborhood. I remember I was trying to decide, Amanda and I were trying to decide whether or not we should stay in Brooklyn or if we should go back to Wisconsin, which is where we had come from originally.
Right.
We had a little kid at the time, and it was one of those inflection points in our life. And we started practicing yoga on the corner and got involved in the community. And there was a party one night. And as part of the party, members of the community who were musical got up and performed. It was a wonderful collection of musicians from different styles and genres or whatever. I was so new to the community that I didn't perform. I didn't even know that that would have been a thing that people were going to do at this party. And I was so blown away, and you were there, and I remember being so impressed, not just that, oh, wow, just at this yoga studio on the corner, there are musicians. There are accomplished professional musicians who are devoting their lives to it in the same way that I am. So that was my first kind of introduction to you and what you do.
Oh, wow.
And it did speak to the richness of this life, of why we choose to live in different places. And at the time, it was very affirming to me that, yes, we're in the right place. We're not mm-hmm. going to move. There's just too much richness here, like mm-hmm. that I still want to learn about. And, you know, that might have even been before I started doing the podcast, or right around that time where I just thought, I need to know more people. I need to, like, figure out what other people are doing, because it's such a resource to live in this place and be surrounded by people that are doing exciting things. So that's what I first knew about you. And, you know, before we met, I had done a bunch of music for kids also. And I don't know if you and I ever talked about this, but
I made
a bilingual children's record in 2003, which won a Parents' Choice Award. And I made it with my dad. And then I went on and made some kids' music with other people as well. So I was always a little bit aware of music for kids also. And then watching what you did with it and have continued to do with it, it's been so beautiful and impressive. That being said, you are, by I think most metrics, an example of a highly accomplished and successful children's music artist. You've won Grammys. You are pushing not only the music forward by doing different genres and playing in different languages, but also you're an advocate, you're a mentor. The reason I say all this is because, and I want to talk about all of it, you are in the neighborhood today after having left Park Slope, after having left Brooklyn to move upstate, because you just did a one-hour concert at the library on my corner. And I think it's funny, and I, not in a belittling way, just a funny thing of like what it looks like on paper to have a career and then what the reality of having a career is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because that's a good gig, I assume. Or it's a gig. It's the kind of gig that a person will do, you know, and you played the lunchtime hour-long music series on the corner at the library.
Yeah. One of the things that I love about Brooklyn, and one of the things I miss a lot, is the Brooklyn Public Library. I love the communities based around libraries. So whenever they call me up, I always try to make an effort. I'll plan things, you know, so I don't just only come down for that. But yeah, like whether it's huge festivals, you know, like we did Austin City Limits and we've done Lollapalooza, or you know, the local library, I'll do it, you know, because a 2-time Grammy Award winner doesn't need to stop at one place, right? It always comes back to what the intention is. Why did you get into this in the first place? So I wanted to create quality music, quality media for kids and families. I wanted to start conversations that some households might not be able to start with music. So, you know, just the messaging, and the three things that I always come back to are joy, community, and resilience. I always check back in with those things, and it's just like, does this align with all of that? If the answer is yes, then onwards I go.
How did you go about even developing that kind of language, joy, community, and resilience?
That took some time. It started off with only joy.
I just want to do joyful music.
Yeah. You know, actually the first album, which coincidentally this year is 10-year mm-hmm. anniversary. You know, I had just had Darius, my son, and you know, I started writing these tunes on ukulele, and it was just sort of this joyful, you know, I always associated this old jazz sound with this joyful time more because of what I associated with, which was like a lot of cartoons. That's what I grew up with. That's how I discovered this style of jazz. So all I was thinking was this joyful thing, joyful music to play for children.
I give you kisses, you get your wishes. I give you hugs and tender loving. I give you smiles, they last a while. I give you praise with my adoring gaze. And you give me pockets full of joy.
As it is with kids, as they get older, things get more complex. It takes a village. Mm-hmm. And what that actually means, actually, that also changed with time too, because it's just like, you know, in the old times, it's just the kids were mostly outside, everybody kind of took care of them. But now it's a little different. You know, I realized that means everybody who's in our lives, they're also part of my son's life. So whether it's my best friend or certain teachers or certain anybody, mm-hmm. you know, the people who are in yoga, everybody got to meet Darius mm-hmm. when he was a teeny tiny baby. And suddenly that's community. I'm like, oh, and that's important. It's like what they bring. And again, keeps getting older. And what does that mean? And it's like, well, things get a little more complex and figuring things out, you know, seeing a child learning something new and how it can be quite challenging, different ways of challenging, right? There's like the physical challenge of learning something new. And then there's the emotional challenge of, you know, it's not going quite the way they wanted. Mm-hmm. And so as a parent, you know, you don't want them to be upset, but they have to go through these steps. And they get frustrated and they get sad. But then I also get that opportunity to show them, hey, look, you did it though. And it's like you see the face like, ah. And that's where resilience come in. It's not something that you can really teach, right? But it's something that you could always point out. It's just like, that was you. That was your work mm-hmm. that you, and you followed through. And now you're wiser and you come out stronger. Now remember that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a constant thing. So that's where we got to, because I realize, you know, that's not just for kids. That's something for all of us to always remember, you know, do things with joy. And in yoga, mm-hmm. we learned there was this word, virya, mm-hmm. right, to do things with joyful effort. Mm-hmm. And that really, really stayed with me, because things aren't easy and things feel like they shouldn't be that joyful. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it from that different perspective, it's just like, all right, it's going to be a little hard, but it's okay. I'm mm-hmm. going to do my best here. And then suddenly, like, the spirit feels a little lighter, and it does feel better to approach it that way. So it's for kids, but it's for all of us.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing before that record in 2014?
So tired of feeling so useless.
Angsty adult music.
So tired of feeling so weak.
I played piano. It was like I would be compared a lot to like Fiona Apple mm-hmm. and Tori Amos.
Mm-hmm. Why can't this body be just a little bit stronger?
So I would play in bars, and I was Luciar was my artist name.
Why is my outlook so bleak?
What else did I do? I did industrial music. Mm-hmm. It was Elwood Emission. So all this like really dark, like angsty stuff. But it was when one guy asked me like, so what kind of music do you make? And I don't know what I said. To this day, I still don't know like what came out of my mouth, but whatever it was, apparently all he said at the end is like, way to sell yourself. And I was just like, what? Apparently, like, I just sounded so boring. And that gave me pause. I'm like, am I not doing this right? Mm-hmm. And I realized, like, I love making music, always. But something wasn't quite there yet. Like, I wasn't quite on the right path. And I tried, you know, like I said, industrial, and I've done this stuff because I really enjoy all this music.
And you had gone, you went to SUNY Purchase for Music?
Yes, yeah.
So you had, already a lot of years behind you and a lot of intention. You had made a decision to be a musician
yeah.
from early on.
Yeah, and production, especially at Purchase, I ran the recording studios in senior year. I was their chief engineer. And like, so I did production and composition. Yeah. So yeah, there was all kind of like I was setting myself up for something.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite clear yet.
So, and what year was Darius born, your son?
Darius was born in 2012, December of 2012.
Right, so it was after he was born that you made your first yes. record for kids.
Yes. And that was born from after, you know, I had this 7-week-old mm-hmm. infant in my arms, and I got invited to do this song a week program. And I said yes.
Tell me about that program. What is that?
It was a few friends, some local friends, they just wanted to songwrite.
Yep.
And they just said, 2013, that's going to be the year to songwrite. And I'm like, well, I have this tiny baby. Can you give me a minute? So I entered I think, just a few weeks in. And what they did was just gave you a word prompt. And you have a week to write a song with that word prompt, no matter where it took you. It didn't matter, you know, whether or not it said the word. It's just wherever that word inspired, whatever it inspired. And then you make a video. That was the challenging thing. It's just like, okay, you can't just say, okay, I wrote this song. It's like, no, you have to perform it too. So you could totally find me on YouTube. It was called The Ignition Lab. And some of the videos, you'll find Darius on me, you know, while I'm playing piano, and I have him like in a little carrier.
Hello, and welcome to The Ignition Lab, week number 5. The prompt for this week is observe. And I'm just joining in, so this is my first one, because I have an infant. This week's song was inspired, of course, by my son here.
But what that did, it's like it sparked this thing in me where it allowed me to let go. I was able to keep up mostly with them every week. And it turned out, I was just kind of learning how to play ukulele at that time. Whenever I picked up the ukulele, Darius got really, really excited. Hmm. And so I wound up with 6 songs that were family friendly. And, I joined the local moms group with their babies, mm-hmm. and I would play the ukulele, and the babies loved the songs. And my husband said, you should really record these songs.
Yeah.
And that's where Pockets Full of Joy. And so it was released in 2014. So that's how it happened.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go back to that first story. I was telling you how, you know, that guy at some pub, you know, asked me, well, tell me about your music. And after this, so I made this first album, this Pockets Full of Joy, and suddenly everything made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it so much.
Yeah.
And I suddenly had this clarity of like, this is what I want to do. I love this so much. Yeah. I love the style. First, I love the like kind of old jazz, which is what I was going for then.
And even in the way you would dress, you would dress like flapper style kind of, right? Real 20s style.
I love the singing it. I loved playing ukulele. And I absolutely loved playing for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started reflecting a little bit about, you know, what I did just in general, like I loved cartoons all my life. Like even as an adult, I still watched cartoons all throughout college. And and just like, oh, why didn't I start doing children's media before?
Well, but I do think having a kid is helpful. You know,
It
seems like you felt a sense of possibility and also less, I don't know, making music for kids, it's like a little bit less about this is my vision, this is my dream, this is my whatever, you know, and it's because you're making it for people.
Right.
And you kind of know who you're making it for.
Yeah, you're right. Because like when it came to the singer-songwriter stuff, where it's just like, you know, the angsty, like, oh, this is my bleeding heart.
This is me.
And like suddenly, first of all, the responsibility became heavier because it's just like, oh my gosh, you're helping shape these kids' minds for the future. But then suddenly it became more meaningful. But I was up for it. I'm like, okay, I get it. And it felt good, man. Kids are honest. They let you know. They're like, oh, I like this song. It's just like, I'm good.
Well, it's interesting also this thing about community where you realize like, well, I wonder if you realized, if you started to see a need for certain kinds of songs, like as you are performing for this community, you say, oh, this is a group of people that needs a song about X or about Y. And I wonder what that relationship was between you and your audience where you got ideas for what you wanted to talk about. It's not just a style of music. Then you have to figure out, well, what are we saying in these songs?
Right. Yeah. See, like the style became more of like, this is the delivery method. Yeah. Right. And like, then it became more about the message. A lot of it was very much inspired by what I felt Darius needed and what he liked. You know, again, just sort of seeing him through challenges, and but also like some of the daily things, lessons to be learned without. I also didn't want to sound very preachy.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted it to be singable for parents. I wanted parents to enjoy it together.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I really feel strongly about family music.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to kids' music.
Right, yeah. Right. So, like, one of my favorite compliments is, like, oh, you know, we keep listening to the CD even after we drop off the kid. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's awesome. You know, so I did a lot of songs. I have a series of songs about gardening, for example, which, you know, I feel that's really important just for life in general.
In our garden, we grow tomatoes. In our garden, we grow sweet basil.
And that ties into composting and things like that. So there's like lessons in there, but then also like, how can we learn about it, but still make it singable and enjoyable? Mm-hmm. Where then I started getting messages from parents saying like, oh yeah, we garden together now. Mm-hmm. And we sing the song together as we garden. And that, you know, so it became things like that where it's just like daily life became just sort of more meaningful and parents started to realize what, you know, singing about it and what that connection felt like was really special. As your child gets older, the needs change. If you hear my different albums and how they progress, the themes get more complex. And so one of the singles I released in 2021 is called Joyce by Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is about diversity.
Mm-hmm.
The verses are all the same. So once you learn one verse, you know them all.
I bring joy and a little bit of noise. It's what I bring to the table, bring to the table, bring to the table.
But the thing is, they're sung by different artists. I brought in two awesome guests. One is this Indian, classical Indian singer, Falu.
Yeah.
Well, here's Falu. I bring spice and all things nice. It's what I bring to the table, bring to the table, bring to the table.
And I brought in Fuch, who is this black, fantastic rapper and singer who, he's a social justice artist for kids.
I bring soul and it never gets old. It's what I bring to the table, bring to the table, bring to the table.
The way each one of them sings is so distinctive.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to show. It's just like, listen, we can do the same stuff, but with different flavor.
You know, I talked to Falu years ago here.
Oh, no, really?
For this podcast.
She's awesome.
I don't have a role model of following somebody. Oh, you know, she did that. Let me just follow that. No. Even now I'm struggling. I have to see what works, what doesn't, and then learn and then do better the next time. So my journey has always been about making mistakes and learning and doing better. So I'm a student. I always feel like I'm learning.
I wonder if coming to the States actually was a gift in that way, because it's very open here.
I would say something. I think coming to the States has been the best thing in my life, because the embrace and the welcome that I've gotten here, I don't think people would have been so open-minded about welcoming what I'm doing. They're now. Now they are. Back then, 15 years ago, maybe, maybe not, I'm not sure. But obviously, I was very young. I was a teenager, and I didn't have, you know, a parent who was already famous. I had a parent who was very talented and who was very strict and disciplined and obviously a musician, but nothing like, oh my God, she's a daughter of Ravi Shankar, or she's a daughter of, you know, I don't have that.
It's an interesting distinction, because as you described your childhood, I did make that leap that isn't there, which is, you know, you say your mother was very musical and that she instilled this in you young. And so there was a kind of assumption that even I made, which was, well, maybe you had some advantage. And you did have advantage, because you had somebody who understood the music.
Right. In that way, I had an advantage because my mom's musical.
Yeah.
But my mom was not Ravi Shankar. So And so many kids who are now doing music are from my style of families, because now there is also an awareness in India that you can survive.
Is that a newer sense
in
India?
Yes, it is very new. Because even there, you know, Indian parents generally want their children to have security, become a doctor, lawyer, architect, and, you know, because they don't believe, like, you're going to succeed.
Did you invite her, encourage her to do that little inflection, that sort of typically Indian inflection in the way she sang it, or did she sort of naturally do that when she started to sing it?
And all things nice.
It was funny because she did it naturally. I did tell her, let it all out.
Yeah.
Like, let it loose. Because she did hesitate for a moment. Like, she asked me, but, you know, this is for American kids, or is it, you know? I'm like, well, I want them to hear your classical awesomeness.
Yes.
And so she's just like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah.
And my favorite part, so I recorded this in my studio at home.
Yep.
I recorded her vocal. And I just remember this one moment where she's just like, okay, Lucy, I'm going to do this microtona raga.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, ma'am, I am hitting record.
Yeah.
I wanted everyone to bring their style, their personality into this song.
Yeah.
And that's what diversity is to me. That's how I see it. That's like, you know, this is how we can live together. It's just like, you still be you.
Yeah.
You be you and bring all the you-ness that there is. And just how wonderful and how interesting it can make the day.
So as you have been developing the project kind of along Darius's, your son's personal development, I mean, at a certain point, it will just align with adulthood.
I'm still going to stick with the kids' music. And it's been really fun seeing him grow up with it. Because, like, we just performed a Brooklyn Bowl last week.
So meanwhile, this is a huge question for me. He turns out to be an exceptionally gifted musician also. He's 11, 12?
He's 11
he's
years
11
old.
And
he
he's
just turned 11.
And he's a performing cellist.
Yes.
And he's like a professional level cellist. And like he has performed in very professional situations.
He has.
That just sort of, like, obviously you provided a wonderful environment for him. And he also totally took to it and got into it.
It's such an interesting space. You know, so like I have this song for him that I wrote about him when he started his cello journey. I know a little fellow.
I know a little fellow when he plays a little cello. He plays that cello like a big, big fellow. When he plucks and he bows all the tunes that he knows. He plays so high. He plays so low. Glissando. Dancing all around the fingerboard.
It's delightful. It's really sweet. He's inspired so many kids to play cello, and I am so moved by that. But he's also not so little anymore. So it's just like, well, I guess we won't be playing that song anymore, but he's still inspiring other kids, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And what's also interesting is seeing him, like, he's really, really great with little children.
Yeah.
So it's become, this is what I was going to say before, it's become this, like, while this, the kind of younger set music that I might write now is not really for him anymore. Yeah. He understands what it's for and honors that. And so when he performs with us, you know, when we perform together as Lucy Kalantari and the Jazz Cats,
and he's one
a
of
cat,
them.
Yeah, he gets what it's for, and he gets why we're doing it.
Yeah.
And that to me is so important and so lovely. And I know at one point, you know, he's not going to be able to do it anymore.
Yeah. What do you attribute his gift to? Do you see it as something that he naturally showed up with? Do you see it as something that you fostered or nurtured? How do you view that?
Are you doing a nature versus nurture question?
A little.
I think it's definitely a little bit of both. See, take me for instance. Like, I know that I was very musical very young.
Yeah.
But I was not in a musical environment
yeah.
at all. Like, my dad played some guitar, but I learned recently that my dad's family, like more his brothers, all mm-hmm. my uncles, they all played. I'm like, where were they?
But they weren't, but you didn't, they weren't, you didn't soak that up.
Yeah, I wasn't, they weren't around when as I was growing up.
Right.
So like, I missed this whole section.
Yeah.
So that's like one version of it. And I would dabble and play and do all this stuff. So it's like, I kind of came into it more slowly
yeah.
and kind of weird sideways. And yeah. like, and I got here eventually yeah. wherever I am, and I'm still going. Yeah. Right. So Darius, right. I see the things. I saw it yeah. from the very start.
You what know, did you see?
I would see him just how connected he was to music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying like as a baby.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's the bouncing when I would play yeah. a ukulele, which was very sweet. But I also had this, you know, we'd do the nighttime ritual, right?
Yeah.
So same music, yeah. same yeah. two pieces. I would play two classical pieces yeah. on the speakers, and he knew it. He knew that it would come. So like it was part of the ritual, right? And so, what they say to do in all the baby books, right? Do have the ritual. What happened though, he was 10 months and there was always a pause between the two pieces. Now I think it was Air on a G String followed by Je ne peux pas, right, Eric?
Satie.
Satie, yeah, yeah. yeah. And I was nursing him on the rocking chair and, you know, he's getting ready to sleep. And in between the two pieces, he would stop. He would
wait.
Pause and wait. And then once the new piece of music would start, he's like, and then he would sigh, and then we would go. I'm like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And I realized, like, he just was just waiting for the sound. He was just like, isn't it going to start? Is it not going to start? This is 10 months we're talking about.
Yeah.
And, like, that stayed with me. I'm like, what was that?
Mm-hmm.
And then about a month later, so here we are still, he's still under a year, I hear him humming to it. Then I hear him humming to my music mm-hmm. that I would sing him a song. And things just sort of got more and more interesting the more verbal he got, where it's just like, oh, he's always singing. So we're going back to, so what's the difference there? It's just, so you have this kind of musical seed in you already. But when you're an environment, mm-hmm. in an environment that's constantly feeding that,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like, oh gosh, I'm totally a children's artist. I'm like yeah. making it akin to gardening. See,
yeah.
when you put some soil, you
yeah.
know, you water that, right? Inevitably, you're just really taking care of this musical plant.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is a product of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's way better musician than I am right now.
Yeah.
Like, he reads way better than I do. He plays, the cello is like an extension of his body. You know, I've never
had that relationship
played, no.
with an instrument.
Like, yeah. you know, I came into piano lessons and things way later
yeah.
than he has. But it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to see it. So it's a bit of both. It's
yeah.
like, you know, you have that thing inside and it's just like, do you feed it?
Yeah.
Do you care for it? Are you always, and there was always instruments around. We always had a lot of music.
Yeah.
And, but it's, and it's still going.
Did you grow up in New York?
I grew up in Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
And in New York.
Yeah. One of your parents is Dominican. The other is Puerto Rican.
Yes.
Which one is Dominican?
My mom.
Your mother's Dominican.
Yeah.
So you were back and forth, or was it just a time in the Dominican Republic and then you moved here, or how?
Yeah, so I was born in the States, which was a little odd, and then I moved to Dominican Republic.
Yep.
So my mom took me with her because she wanted to move over there.
Yeah.
And so I was about 9. And then I moved back to the States when I was 15, and
yeah.
I started living with my dad.
Wow.
Yeah, in Staten Island.
In Staten Island. I remember when you won your first Grammy and you went home and they did news pieces on
oh
you and
gosh,
stuff and
yeah.
you were with your mom and mm-hmm. it was like, it was clear even in those videos that, you know, you were both so proud to be like a, you know, from there, but also that you had spent a lot of time away, you know, and it's like an interesting dynamic of being from within and also outside of a place, you know?
Yeah. My life in Dominican Republic was a very strange one. It was very, very different, you know, having been Americanized
first
already. Yeah. And then going over there.
Yeah.
But actually that's where the more serious musical turns happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt amazing to be able to be honored by the country, you know, that they were just like, oh, Dominican won a Grammy. Yeah. Let's celebrate her. It felt so nice to be able to go back and be like, no, this is where a lot of this started.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was very sweet. And my mom was like totally a rock star. It was very sweet.
Yeah. Well, and now you can relate to that. I mean, right. To be the parent of somebody who's celebrated is like a wonderful thing.
It's so nice.
How different culturally is a Puerto Rican house and a Dominican house?
I think they're pretty similar. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's really like everybody's just so different. Like, yeah. I'm getting to know more about my cousins lately from the Puerto Rican side.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed about my dad's side is that they embrace the musical parts a lot. Like, I can't even explain. Like, I spent one Thanksgiving with them years ago, and everybody brought their instruments and all this stuff. And I'm like, what? Usually I'm the one who takes out all the instruments. Like, when we host Christmas, I have like all these kids' instruments. Yeah. So we have like this jam session in the end. And that's like I started that.
Yeah.
And for my dad's side, it's like, that's just sort of everybody brings in all their stuff, like they'll do all the harmonies and all the stuff. It's just so nice.
You went to high school here in Staten Island?
I did. I went to high school 1 year in Dominican Republic.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then the last 3 years of high school in Staten Island.
Did you feel that you had to do any kind of identity switching, code switching?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that was hard. That was very strange. You know, there were just things in DR that are just so different. I was happy to be back in the States, but I was also very confused about, like, you know, because that's also adolescence.
Totally.
Like, that's, you know, what was it? I was 15.
Yeah.
And, you know, so a lot of people had made changes and switches, and people were already sorted. And it's like kind of going into Harry Potter, where everybody's houses are already sorted. And I'm just like, I don't know where to go.
You didn't even know that those were houses were an option.
<know. laughs> So that was like, that's kind of bizarre. But then also the language became an interesting thing too, because while yes, I knew English, but now I was missing this big chunk of language
of slang
development. There was a slang.
Yeah.
But then there's also like, there were, you know, teaching SAT words, and I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know about the SATs, and I didn't know, suddenly like I'm cramming.
Right.
Because all these kids are just like, you know, here are the things that we have to know. I'm like, oh, well, I do. So that was pretty hard. I feel like I'm still catching up.
Really?
Yeah, sometimes. And I also feel more enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, again, it's like all about the environment, right? Like, the thing about having a kid is that you realize that we don't stop learning.
Mm.
We really don't stop growing. And that was the thing about having Darius and becoming a mom, just really changed for me. It gave me this hope and this kind of this view of endless possibilities. Like, I knew that in theory, right? People always say, like, don't give up hope and, you know, keep going. And it's just like, but then when you see a child learning, you're like, oh, you're not joking. And it just becomes more visceral. And so there's the process of like teaching your child something, and suddenly you're like, oh, well, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're learning kind of along with your kid. But then also it's like, oh, but I could also continue down this mm-hmm. road. So I didn't grow up in that environment where it's like learning
continues.
Yeah. Like, you know, everybody was very much focused on, like, I work this. This is what I do. And when I come home, I turn on the TV, and that is my life.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's kind of boring.
Yeah.
So, like, suddenly I had control and realized, like, well, my life doesn't have to be that way. I don't have to continue that cycle.
Yes.
And here we are. And there's so much more to come.
I told myself before becoming a father that I wanted to have achieved at least the top line items on my agenda for life. You know, like, I want to have done X, Y, and Z, because I figured once my kid was born, then, you know, basically, I guess my life was going to stop somehow.
Like, it was over.
It was done. And then it's about them, and it's no longer about me, and there won't be any more me, and there won't be any more growing, and there won't be any more developing. And, like, in my life, all of the major successes or major, I don't know, just the stuff that I'm most pleased with, not only about my family, but me personally, have all come after my daughter was born.
Isn't that amazing?
Not, you know, not that it stopped, but it actually kind of began in a different way. So I relate to that. And I also totally relate to that idea of realizing one day that cliches, so many of them, are actually true. Like, not all. And some are stereotypes and some are prejudices and whatever. But every now and then you hear a thing and you're like, oh, that actually comes from a deep meaning, like, don't give up, which is, like, sounds like the most trite thing to say. Don't give up. And then you realize, oh, don't give up.
Like, really?
Yeah, don't. Don't stop. What was success like for you before time? What would have success looked like to you before Darius was born, when you were an angsty singer-songwriter?
I don't know. I guess I had some, like, milestones that I wanted. Right. I wanted to have music in film. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be on a cover of a magazine. I don't know. Like, they seem, and still even saying it now, like, I remember just sort of being a little like, well, that seems like that's the right thing, right? That would mean that, you know, check. But I also remember not feeling like those were words coming out of my mouth as things that should be goals.
Yeah.
But then I don't know. Again, I go back to that guy's conversation when he was just like, way to sell yourself. It's just like, no, I need to love and absolutely believe in the thing that I'm doing. And that is success.
Yeah.
Then suddenly, like, it's just when it just makes more sense. Suddenly you have this vision of yourself and how you want things to be. And it doesn't necessarily mean that that's exactly what it's all going to look like.
Yeah.
But it's just like suddenly, like, the floor, like the, I don't know why I was picturing, like, Michael Jackson in that video where the floor lights up.
It's Billie Jean.
Yeah. Like, I don't know why I was picturing them. Like, you know, then suddenly the tiles on the floor start lighting up.
So that's what I'm thinking about as you're talking about this also, is the goals that reveal themselves to you when things come into a little bit more focus, or when you are on a path that, you know, you believe in and that you understand. Because it's a question I ask of myself and the people that I see. You started making, in your case, music inspired by Darius, you got involved in family music, then you could start to understand, oh, this is how this would grow. This is where I might be able to perform. This is who might be able to buy my records. Well, now I'm in a community where it's small enough that it's not totally out of the question that maybe I could submit this thing for a Grammy. Maybe you could win a Grammy. I mean, maybe you could win a Grammy, right? I'm not up against Beyonce anymore or Fiona Apple. Now I'm in a space where I could actually set an achievable goal. Here's a box that's lighting up in front of me that I see that I could step on. And I think that's part of success also, is in being able to identify goals and figure out what the steps are to go towards those. And sometimes if you're not quite in the right alignment, you don't even see what it is exactly.
Isn't that curious? And that's the thing. And as a mentor, this is something I talk about with my mentees a lot. It's just like, what is your vision? What's your intention?
Yeah.
Always come back to that. Because then everything else will make sense. And when I was about to publish Pockets Full of Joy, I was speaking with this woman who I met through like a community of musicians. And she's the one who told me I should submit it for a Grammy. And I'm like, how is that even a thing? Like, I didn't even know that that was possible. And at the time, this was 2014. So like joining the Recording Academy was a little bit easier. Now there's like recommendations and all this other stuff. So she sent me a link. Here's how you join the Recording Academy. And thanks to my angsty adult music, I had all the credits that I needed. And suddenly, like, Pockets Full of Joy was on the ballot for Best Children's. Now, that one didn't win, nor did the one after.
Yeah.
But what it did do is, like you said, it's like suddenly there were these possibilities because all these voters were listening.
Yeah.
And they're just like, this is really cool. I really, really enjoyed this. And I've sent it to them. They started spreading it to like their family members and stuff. So yeah,
I am not a member of the Recording Academy. And
We got to talk.
I guess we got to talk. And it hasn't been clear to me. I mean, I make a solo record every 18 months. I've produced a lot of records. My dad has been a member, but like, I never joined, and I never frankly understood why I should. And I guess maybe because I'm not a member, I don't understand why I should. So I don't vote. And I mean, I have there's a Latin Grammy on the shelf behind you, but like, I didn't submit it. So, but interesting. So that's the question.
Wait, you produce Alex Cuba?
Yeah.
Get out. I love him. He's so good.
Yeah, he's amazing. He lived with us while we made that record.
What?
I knew you at that time.
Oh my God.
Actually,
I remember when you went.
To the Grammys.
To the Grammys.
I don't know. Maybe I'll keep this in. I don't know. I mean, this is like, and I think Amanda does not agree with this version of the story, but she was doing her 200-hour yoga teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
I had committed for that season to not take any big projects or go out of town because we had a little kid and it was every Saturday and every Sunday.
Yes.
And
oh boy.
It was starting in September or something. This is and I get a phone call in August from Alex Cuba, who had heard a thing that I worked on and was like, I think maybe you need to be the producer of this new record that I want to work on. I think you understand the sound that I want. Which, of course, like, you dream of a phone call like that, especially from an artist like this who's so great. And I was like, oh my God, of course, this is when this phone call comes, is like in the season when I've promised not to do anything. And so he did come during that season. And it was complicated for us because I had made this commitment to not do anything, but I also couldn't say no.
Yeah.
And then it won a Latin Grammy, got nominated and lost to Ricky Martin in the Latin pop category in the main Grammys. And there was a part of me that believed after that happened and still sort of does believe that when situations like that arise and you still know that you have to do it, even though it's putting a lot of stress on people around you, it may be a sign that you do need to do it. I'm not even sure. It's such a careful thing to say.
It's such a curious thing because, like, especially, you know, having a kid and that stuff, you know, it's chaos. It's like constantly chaos. And, like, we kept saying, like, my husband and I kept saying that, like, all right, when things calm down, we're going to blah, 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 whatever it was we were saying that we were holding off on. Yeah. And suddenly, like, I had this epiphany.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my gosh, things are never going to calm down.
Yeah.
So you just got to do the thing that you really want to do. Because if you keep waiting, that moment will never arrive.
That's right. And at the same time, I think maybe part of it, the flip side of that is to say, it was very clear to me that I needed to do that project. There are other times when it's like, maybe I want to do something, but I can't because it's, you know, I also need to show up for my family. Like there's versions of it. Yeah. It's not do everything that you want, just anything that you want all the time.
You still have to work together.
But
to,
it's more like when something that is so, it's a challenge and you know it's, and you're asking a lot of the people around you, but you still know that you need to do it because it's, then it just was clear, like, oh, this is one that I'm willing to make life difficult for us because I need this. And
what a funny thing to say. I am willing to make life difficult for us.
It's such a selfish
just
thing.
For this thing. But it makes sense, you know, like,
it's so selfish.
No, but the thing is, like, and the truth is, ever since we you know, we came to that
realization. It never
realization.
Calms down.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we've done some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. To do amazing things, it takes sacrifice.
Yeah.
It takes work, you know? And, like, in the end, you find a way for it to be worth it, but you also enjoy the journey, too. It's still crazy. And, like, it gets quite complicated. But you can't just not do.
So I want to talk about what happened. I guess because the question that I was leaning towards initially was, do the Grammys matter? Do they help? Does the Academy help? I know that it has become a huge part of your life. You are a mentor. And I have to say, maybe because I only have one and you have two or whatever, like somehow it's like two. Oh, my God. Like now we're rolling here. Like now it's now we got a situation happening.
I almost got a third. I almost got the Latin Grammy. I almost got a nice red one.
And I guess I ask for various reasons. I mean, for asking for a friend, I guess, but also like because it's easy to resent awards and the sort of mysterious monolith of that version of the business that so many people feel when they put music out. So I guess I would love for you to just sort of speak to that whole journey of so somebody suggested that you submit it and what sort of ensued after that.
I think I was able to get such a positive view of this rather than approaching it from a jaded point or, you know, from the get-go. The reason being is that suddenly I was introduced to another community of musicians. You know, and everybody wants you to vote for them and everybody's like trying, they're doing their thing. But what that opened the door to is just people being awesome and bringing out their awesomeness, you know, recording it. And everybody's in a different stage, right? You'll get, you know, some recordings that aren't so great. You'll get music and songs that are like amazing, others that are, you're just like, okay, that wasn't for me.
Yeah.
It's good. But no matter what, it was just like, it was so much art. And
did it make you question your own art at all? Like when you hear really good stuff? Like,
no.
Not that yours isn't really good, but you know what I mean?
And that's like, which was validating, of course, you know, but it was just so wonderful hearing people talk about their music. And what they felt about it and why they made it. And suddenly, like, I just sort of got into, like, the psyche of musicking, right? Like, why are we doing this? Kind of, again, back to that intention. It's so important.
Yeah.
So every season, you know, I get bombarded with a bunch of, like, FYC, right?
Yeah.
For your consideration.
Yes.
But I'm always open for it. I always, like, anytime, send it to me. I give you permission and all this stuff. But that's why, because I love that people pour in so much of their heart and soul into this art that they're putting out into the world. So that's just my point of view. So I actually, like, I enjoy it.
Yes.
I enjoy listening to people's art. And it gets a little difficult sometimes with time.
So you allot a certain amount of time every season to listen.
I do. And I'll try to do it, like, in the car and things like that.
And then do you respond or not necessarily?
Not always.
Yeah.
I mean, that gets way harder because then if I have to respond to every single thing, I'm just like, okay, we're going to be here. Like, I still have work to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So like, but I listen to most of what I get.
Yeah.
I run out of time sometimes, but I listen to most of it. That's how I entered. So coming in with that point of view, it already kind of gives a different sense. It becomes this kind of fun ride. And, then there was the actual bit of what the Recording Academy does, and I got to sit on governance for a hot minute, and I saw, like, they did more than just the Grammys, right? That was just, that's their big flashy show. They also do a lot of other things, like Music Cares, which, especially during COVID, we got to see a lot of their work. And, you know, people who have had accidents, you know, they helped cover all the medical bills, you know, things like that. Then, of course, there's the mentorship program, Grammy U, and there's advocacies.
So you work in Grammy U.
Yeah, I volunteer as a mentor for kids who are completing their university program for music, either in production or business and things like that. They pair me with someone. So all this stuff, like, so they have all these things that they do in the community. I'm sorry, the Recording Academy in general, and all these different categories.
Yeah.
So you get to choose what you want to kind of put your efforts in as a volunteer.
Yeah.
And I quite love that. I love that they have that available. And it's funny because, again, you get the flashy Grammys, right? That's the shiny part.
Yeah.
But then there's, like, all these other, like, kind of community efforts that they do. And that's what I think, that's what I love about it.
Do you think it has helped your career in the sense of gaining an audience or opportunities to perform or the kinds of things that would bring income?
Winning Grammys?
Winning Grammys or even just being involved. If you hadn't won Grammys particularly, I guess, but then yes, also winning Grammys.
I think being involved, again, it just sort of opened up doors for, like, a different kind of community, right? Like, so I'm meeting so many different people that I wouldn't have met. Like, Darius performed with an orchestra in Oklahoma. Okay, he was 10 years old at that point, and he performed as a soloist with an orchestra, right? A concerto piece.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's nuts. But where did that come from? Mm-hmm. That was somebody I met through this like community, and they're a professor at the University of Central Oklahoma, and they run their music program. They're like, I've been seeing your kid grow for years. This wasn't like all of a sudden, you know, to try to get a vote or anything like that. They've been, you know, they're a cello teacher, and they just, they're like, one day when he gets older, I would love to have him come play with our orchestra. And she really did. She followed through. She's like, he's getting so good. So before he gets too expensive. And it was so, so sweet. You know, it's things like that where it's just like, you know, you're suddenly like on different people's radar, and everybody does so many different things. And how lovely is that, you know? In terms of, like, after we won, it's a funny thing. I think Secret Agent 23 Skidoo, he won a few years before me. And what he was telling me as we were, I was a nominee at that point, and we're on the phone. He's like, hey, Lucy. He was on the album that won. And he tells me, so winning a Grammy is like getting a golden key, where people finally return your phone calls. Yeah. He's right, but that doesn't mean they give you what you want. He's like, you still have to break down the door, even though you have the key. But at least they have the decency of calling back, which is kind of nice.
Yeah,
because it is hard. You know, you know. You know, just the amount of calls and follow-ups and follow-ups and follow-ups. It's like, it's really kind of disheartening. So it is nice to see that. And, you know, so people just sort of pay attention to you the first time.
Yeah.
Which is nice. So you better have something very interesting to say right away.
Unfortunately, you've been honing your pitch for years ever since that guy told you that you didn't know how to sell yourself. So you do have something interesting to say. Yeah, I mean, I get that. Even in doing this project, I have to say, and I catch myself doing it, it seems to be a shorthand for explaining that somebody is established or is here or has been valued by the community and their peers. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't love saying it when I introduce my episodes as if I'm introducing you this week and last week I introduced Lau Noah. Lau Noah doesn't have a Grammy. You have two Grammys.
Yeah.
It doesn't. Yeah, exactly. But what does it matter? I'm not telling you that we should listen to this interview because of the Grammys. I'm saying that I think this is somebody that you should know about and I think is really interesting. But somehow I always say if somebody won a Grammy, I always put it in the introduction. You know, I think that it does become, like I say, a kind of a quick way of saying something about their career.
And that's a thing. Like, I mean, there are many amazing artists who have never gotten even a nomination.
My father has made 35 records and has never won a Grammy. And he was nominated once for packaging.
For packaging? That's incredible.
And he's 80 years old. And he said to me last year, you know, I think I probably am never going to win a Grammy. And this is a person who is very established in his career. Yes. And so I think it dogs him. And in a way, I think because of the categories that he's in and what kind of music that he makes, and because he eventually just got tired of submitting and losing, that started to color my relationship with the Academy. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of why I was like almost in solidarity with my father's losses.
Right, I just
was like, I'm not going to do this.
You know, Nina Freelon,
mm-hmm.
she was nominated. It was several times.
Yeah.
And so she's up for a nomination again this year with her son.
Yeah.
And really fantastic children's album.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just so interesting. Because, like, when I was reading about her before, because at this one year, she was nominated, and so was her son in two separate categories. And she was just, you know, one day. And it's just like, you know, you are great. Like, yeah, it's fun to have the gear and all this stuff. But no matter what, you are great, and you are bringing some incredible art into the world. And at the end of the day, that's where it's at. It's fun to get the accolades.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think one should, you know, I think it's cool to keep trying and doing stuff.
Yep.
I don't think that should be why you do it, though.
Yeah.
And that's where things like can get a little hairy, where it's just like, because suddenly, like, as I've seen some seasonal submitters too, it's just like, that's what they're doing.
After.
They're just like, and it's just like, well, that's not enough. That's not enough to you know, put music out, you know.
One thing that I have noticed about the way you celebrate your victories is that, you know, you also celebrate that you are a female producer. Hmm. And it seems like that was something that needed celebrating, that you needed to sort of value. And maybe when you got in there, saw that other female producers need to be encouraged.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it never occurred to me that certain things were rare, right? Like, you know, female producers or like, I knew that engineering, like even when I was at school, you know, that I ran the program, they're like, you're the first chief engineer that was female. I'm like, oh, cool. All right.
Yeah.
But what I didn't like is what that meant. Like, suddenly I had this pressure or something, like, where it's like I had to perform in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm still a student. Can I still be a student? Can I still learn? And that's the strange thing about being the first or the only, that suddenly, like, you're expected to be so exceptional that it's just like, I wasn't sure if I was still allowed to be a student and to still learn and to still grow. And again, this always goes back to environment, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about what is the environment, a musical place where you keep learning and growing like that, and you kind of allow that to grow. So, like, are you in an environment where, you know, as a producer, as an engineer, is that nurtured? Is that cared for? Is that, like, you just keep going? It doesn't matter. Gender really shouldn't matter, right? Yet, because I was always in the studio with a bunch of dudes, it's just like, I did stand out.
Yeah.
And, like, so that said, when I got my Grammy solely as a producer, now I produced all my records, you know, like, I am so ridiculously meticulous about so many details. So having a Grammy that says producer and engineer, I'm like, holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I suddenly realized what that meant, not just to, like, oh, here's my life's work, that the things that I've been doing, but also what that meant to somebody else.
Yeah.
Somebody else looking in. Because there are people who are where I was.
Yeah.
Right. Where it's just like, well, do I have to be blah, blah, blah?
Yeah.
Can I still learn? Can I still grow? Can I still... And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And keep going.
Yeah.
Like, really keep going.
Yeah.
So, yes, I do make a point of mentioning how I am a Latina woman.
Well, that was the next question also. And, yeah.
You know, being a Hispanic woman who's producing and engineering. And, like...
Because that's an even more rare
combination. Yeah. Just, like, just keep narrowing it. Yeah. It's really nice to see... Now, I've met so many women producers and engineers, and like, and Denise engineered and mixed, you know, my first few albums. And like,
was it important to you, or were you drawn to her in some way because she was a woman?
It was just funny. I'm trying to think of how we got there. I think it was timing. It wasn't an intentional, like, I am going to look out for. I feel like I do more intentional things like that now. Kind of putting more people in the spotlight. I'm also like Joyce by Soul was mixed by Noel Branzini. He is a Colombian dude. He did a work with Fantastic Negrito. And like, so clearly I'm not like, only women. I'm still very, very open, but I definitely like my mastering engineer for that one was Emily Lazar. And then my last single I mixed Music in My Head, and it was mastered by a Dominican woman, Jean Montalvo.
Listening to the sound that keeps on circling like a record going round inside my head.
I love working with people. I love learning from the people that I'm working with. But yes, I will try.
Yes.
I will make some intention. I'll try to look for balance. Once I kind of had this sort of awakening, like doing the album that I produce, all the ladies, it was about equality, right? Women equality, and showing this for little girls, telling young girls that they can be anything, they can do anything. So it's like, oh, well, look at, am I doing enough?
Lift me up, lift me up. Don't bring me down. I'll lift you up, lift you up. Won't bring you down. All the ladies, ladies, gather around me. Let's support each other with the power of we.
But some people I've talked to have said, I don't want to be celebrated because I'm a woman. I want to be celebrated because I'm good. I want you to like my work, you know? And I've totally value that. And I think I relate to that. I wouldn't want people to say he's really good for anything. I just would want them to say, I like what he does, or I don't like what he does. I hadn't heard this one before, which is, well, if I'm the first woman, does that mean that I'm supposed to already know everything? Or am I allowed to? Because I don't think anybody knows everything. Man, woman, tall, short, whatever, right? I mean, you don't, like, is anybody expected to know everything? And that your initial response to that was, wait, do you think that I know everything already because I'm the first woman? Like, but seriously, like, what was that?
I just felt like there were these expectations suddenly, because like they would give it to like the best or something like that. It's like, am I the best?
But maybe you were the best.
I don't know.
You're the best there, and the years that you were there, you were the best.
I mean, I was certainly very active, and I guess that's the thing, that it's just like I did feel, and I don't know if where that came from or what. What was going on at that time? But I just remember feeling that strongly. And I do remember that kind of getting in the way. In fact, so much so that one of the things we talk about at home, you know, as we're raising Darius, is just like, approach everything, approach things, especially new things, with an empty cup. Don't assume you got it. Don't assume you know it all, you know, because then that way you start filling it. You could fill it with more knowledge. And it's such an interesting thing. Once we started saying that, I go back and I think about that and I'm like, yeah, that was the thing. It's like my cup was like full, and it was kind of full of fluff because I felt like I had to like perform, like it was performative or something, because I had the pressure. It's like so weird. And there were times where it was like, people were expecting. I'm like, but you know, you find your way.
Yeah.
You figure it out with anything that we approach. It's just being open. And also, actually, my studio, because of this, my studio is called Joy Sound Lab.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while I do make music for kids and it's joyful and all this thing, I really wanted the word lab in there. I didn't want it to just be called, you know,
studio.
Joy Studios or da da da. because I wanted that sense of experimentation. Mm-hmm. I wanted people to know that it's just like, not everything is set in stone. And it's just like, we're still learning and we're still figuring it out. Mm-hmm. I'm still learning and I'm still figuring things mm-hmm. out. And that's totally okay. And like my slogan that I have written nowhere is come in with a sense of play, which I think is so important for creativity. That's the environment that I want to always have for like all the things that I'm creating. Anything, even cooking, you know, it's just like, well, I ran out of this thing. What happens if I put this thing in? You know, it's just, that's what you're doing. You're just sort of making magic from different ingredients and from different opportunities. And mm-hmm. it's all has to be in an environment where that's encouraged and that feels good to do.
So you are focusing on doing more production for other people as well?
Yeah. So this past year, actually, I produced a lot of different artists. I didn't realize how much I had done until I did like a kind of wrap up or recap in September. And like I had worked on, I don't know, 9 different things. Now, I didn't produce entire records. Yeah. I did a lot of singles. Yeah. Some I did co-writing with. Some I produced, like the artist came in with a song. One of my favorites is Katie Norgard from Chicago, a song called I Am Enough. And like they say, like, she is a female Mr. Rogers, right? She is wonderful. The title of the song says it already.
I am enough.
There's this one part in the song.
You are enough.
Where she invites the listener, do you want to sing along?
We make space.
Every time I got to that part in the song while I'm working out, I'm like, yeah, I'm just sort of like, I'm like, I do, Miss Katie.
Do you want to sing along? You can repeat after me. I am enough.
I am enough.
You are enough.
You are enough.
We make space.
We make space.
For all of us.
For all of us.
It's been such a joy just being able to bring an artist's vision to life.
I am enough.
I think where I want to end, and I love that we haven't even talked about this, when you talked about identifying theoretical things that you might have wanted when you were an angsty singer-songwriter, and you said, well, maybe a cover of a magazine or maybe music for film. It's interesting the way life plays out in ways that are both not what you would have expected and also seem so inevitable. You are a Latina children's music composer, performer, producer, and you would be a perfect person to write songs for Dora if it were going to be rebooted and they needed new songs. It just seems like so obvious, right? And then at the beginning of this year, you made this post where you said, I can finally share this thing that I got to write songs for the new Dora. And when I read that, I was like, well, duh. I mean, that's like, makes of course. But on the other hand, it is the manifestation of a tiny seed of a dream that didn't have any dirt to be, to use your analogy, to be potted in. It always comes back to the dirt. So I think it's a beautiful full circle thing to hear you say, I would have liked to have written music for film or for TV or whatever. And then you got to do it in the most iconic Latina children's program that ever existed.
I mean, that was so cool hearing you say that. It's just like, you're talking about me?
Yeah.
That's me, really? Like, it still feels like a dream, you know? I had been doing it for a while before I was able to talk about it. Like, that's a long time, you know?
To
it
was
like
to sit on it. Did somebody reach out to you?
Yes, yeah. And it was just, I mean, what can I say? I'm a cartoon lover, and I love music, and I'm writing music for cartoons. Like, how perfect. So yeah, it feels amazing. And like, what's been really great too is how much it's given me the opportunity to really dive into more modern Spanish music.
Spanish, yeah.
Yeah. And like, because I'm, you know, constantly doing research and doing stuff. And like, And I love doing arrangements, right? Yeah. I love horn arrangements. And I'm like, oh, well, now I'm doing a lot of arrangements, you know? It's been just such a joy from top to bottom. Their turnaround is very, very quick. It's a fun challenge that my, you know, my week song a week thing helped me with, right? Yep. To allow me to let go and just create.
Gotta find las estrellas. Bring them back to the sky.
A majestic constellation. The colorful quetzal will shine.
As we lead up to the treetops. Gotta climb way up high.
Arriba, arriba.
Oh, here we are, coming full circle. We've talked a lot about environment, right? How important that is. And it's just like, and giving yourself the ability of to grow and to keep learning. And so I feel like all of these things, including my angsty music, it's trained me.
Yeah.
You know, it's allowed me to be this person that I am. And only at this particular phase, right? Mm-hmm. I'm still going. Like, I got projects lined up that I'm delayed on. But all of these things, they all had meaning. They were not failures.
Yeah.
That I didn't make it as a, you know, angsty piano banging, you know, artist is irrelevant. Like, none of that. It's what I got from it. The things that I was able to pull from it, I use today.
Yes.
And that's winning.
Yeah. And you can't predict. You never can predict. But my dad always says, every time we walk on stage, he says, all our best efforts got us here. Mm. Everything that we did before this moment led to us being here, basically, which I think is really true.
He's 100%.
I remember when we practiced yoga together that you had been dealing with some physical difficulties also. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what they were, but I remember that they were like slightly mysterious and that you were just constantly managing it.
Yeah.
Which is another, I imagine, just on the menu of challenges that...
Yeah, the things that we deal with, the different things that life throws at you, right? Again, it's so interesting how life does these things, because I feel like that's just another lesson that I needed to carry and work with. At the time, after many, many tests and stuff, they just said it's fibromyalgia, which is kind of like this bucket thing. But over the years, like eventually, I finally got an autoimmune diagnosis. So it's something that I'm constantly working on and working with. But it's allowed me to shape certain things and make choices. Mm. They help me, yes. But also I realize what this is all doing. We are, as parents, right? We're modeling for our children. So the choices that I'm making are healthy choices, choices for good health. And I'm modeling that for Darius. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing him like lately where it's just like, I want to do this thing. I feel like I want to be a little healthier mom. And it's like, I want to be more like you. And it's very funny because like I'm seeing him deciding, making these choices. And you know, I've always told him like, we got to make, you know, healthier choices. It doesn't mean like you don't get to eat your ice cream.
Yeah.
It's just like, what does moderation look like and that kind of thing. So it's really, really neat to see him, you know, think about that. And all of that came from just like, oh, I have to be really conscious about some of the things I do, you know, just even physically. And that was one of the reasons why I enrolled in yoga. Again, I had studied with Vivekan before. And like, I just went off on something else. And then I came back because I was feeling so many physical things that I needed to rebalance.
Yeah.
And so isn't that funny how it leads us here?
Yes.
I feel like there's something else that's related in there. It's not necessarily just with health, but just like all these things, all these choices that we make. And you were talking about how after you became a dad, how that shifted certain things in your life and how, you know, you find yourself being more successful in your craft and your music. And the thing is about being a parent is just that modeling thing. It's just like you can't tell your kid you can be anything you want. You can pursue the thing if you're not doing it yourself. If you're miserable doing whatever it is that you do for work, which, you know, we have to make sacrifice there too. Like, I get it. We have to make ends meet, but they need to see you do something that you enjoy also.
You are singing my song. I mean, and especially that particular tension between making compromises and doing work that's meaningful. Lucy Kalantari, thank you so much for being here with me today and telling me your story.
Well, thank you for listening.
There she was, my friends, Lucy Kalantari. What a wonderful person, wonderful story, tending the garden.
Voy detrás de una luciérnaga, siguiendo su lucecita.
I'll be back again in your headspace with another deep dive before you know it. Until then, I'll talk to you soon.